Turns out, once again, we were right all along.
As always. I mean, frankly, like, look at our track record. When are we wrong? I mean, like, don't count Tucker Carlson.
I mean, like, realistically, I can't really think of a time we're wrong. Everyone gets a freebie on exactly. being wrong. Other than that, though, never really been wrong. And, of course, I'm speaking about RFK. When I was first writing the show notes to cover him, like, doing a little our little expose on RFK Jr., I was a little apprehensive about it because he wasn't really getting a lot of coverage. And I was like, do we really need to? Like, is this really worth our time to talk about this?
Is he even funny enough?
But now, right, exactly. Does he give us enough content? But now I'm really glad we did cover RFK because it turns out we were right all along. And he's getting picked up by people like the Lex Fridman Show.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he went on Joe Rogan recently or if that was from a while ago, but he's been platformed.
I think it was a while ago when he like did the first round of anti-vax stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's where it popped off.
But he's getting covered by quite a lot of people. Interestingly, people that are mostly right-wing, which is like, should tell you something.
He's running as a Democrat. Like, I have to remind you every time we talk about him. Like, he's running in the Democratic Party.
He's trying to primary Joe Biden. But the reason I say that we were right again is because when we were doing our initial analysis of RFK and his positions, we said, oh, well, you know, if he's not giving any structural critique of capitalism, when he's talking about, you know, big pharma or big agriculture or whatever it is, he's basically just screaming. You might as well just be saying, like, it's the Jews with all of his conspiracy theories. And he did that.
And then he did. Straight up. It's the Jews and the Chinese.
Yeah.
You can't forget that one.
He just
one.
Ended up doing it because he was either getting interviewed or on some show or whatever it may have been, where he basically said that COVID was, quote unquote, ethnically targeted to avoid Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese people.
Chinese people famously never affected by COVID.
It just isn't true, of course. Like, he just made it up statistically, right?
Wuhan, famously not the epicenter of the virus.
Yeah, yeah. They weren't welding doors shut in mainland China or anything like that. You know what I mean? They weren't doing anything to lock down the entire nation to avoid COVID infections and deaths. But of course, we were right because he just came out and said, like, yep, Jewish people, they did it. They planned it. It's the cabal.
Which it's like wild that, like, this is when it got wild.
Right. You know,
like, the anti-vax stuff wasn't even crazy.
Yeah.
Based on the media landscape right now, him coming out with the anti-vax shit, that's nothing.
Compared to his vaccine takes, like, now we've gotten to the meat of his, all of his conspiracy theories.
To the good stuff.
This is kind of like the core of it. Everything's converged, really. And it just turns out, for him, it's the Jews. It always has been.
It's crazy.
And this is where all of that thinking leads, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a brain disease to be this conspiracy minded.
I guess I appreciate the blending of the Chinese into this one, though, because I feel that's a new spin we haven't seen in a while. The thing, it's been around for a long time, the anti-Jewish conspiracy theories, all that sentiment, the global cabals, but the Chinese stuff, that's an American bit of spice.
That's fair,
on top of it that we don't see too often.
You got to add the little spin in there because, you know, China scary, China bad.
Exactly.
Of course, in American propaganda. But of course, you got to go back to basics sometimes, right?
Like what better thing could he have said? Oh, it was ethnically targeted to spare the Jews and the Chinese, but also ethnically targeted to be super deadly against Americans and Taiwanese.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that would have really been
And he's almost like grabbing on to the I don't know, the woke side of American politics.
Yeah,
because of course COVID highlighted a lot of the, I don't know, disparities between white and black Americans, because in black communities, they dealt with COVID in a lot harsher ways. It was a lot worse for marginalized communities in the United States. And if you care about that, then according to RFK, we need to stop the cabal.
Yeah, exactly. Not capitalism. Not wealth inequality, income disparities, underprivileged schools and areas. No, none of that.
Patents on vaccines, none of that. Well, because vaccines kill people, according to RFK. YouTube, please
don't
take this down.
Well, that's a whole other part of the issue. Yeah, please, Spotify, don't put that little COVID information warning.
They're going to. It's over. It's happened to so many of our episodes.
Oh, that's a good one. Oh my gosh. Speaking of good ones though, Culture Critic, that's an account that's been popping up on our Twitter feed. I don't know if it's been popping up on yours. We haven't engaged with it too much, and say for this week, because we'll get into it. We'll tell you why. But like, contextually, they've been popping up on our account, and I've always got like bad vibes from them.
Oh yeah.
Because one, like, calling yourself Culture Critic with the Marblehead statue, like, unless you're explicitly left wing, there's some like,
well, yeah, and I've
inferences
I've
to be made there.
This week on Twitter, I feel like this is like a common a segment in our show now. I've seen so many right wing accounts, especially like tweeting photos of like you know, Italian architecture from like the Renaissance, and like, why isn't this kind of thing made anymore? And that's kind of where, that's kind of like the leaning that Culture Critic and a lot of similar Twitter accounts have had. It's like they post Roman statues, statues from like the Renaissance and stuff. They're like, what happened to this? And the implication's always like, oh, it's black people or it's women.
It's the degradation of Western society because of gay people, black people,
Jewish
women.
People sometimes, or the Chinese now.
It really all converges. So. Of course.
It all comes full circle.
It all goes, but I always get like bad vibes from accounts that are like that. And there's this weird air of pretension attached to the account that like wasn't like a left wing ivory tower pretension. It was a very racist pretension. Uh-huh. And I guess it kind of like came full circle this week when they tweeted just pictures of like what you would think of as like early 1950s style like artwork just the traditional 1950s style nuclear family, all white, 100% white. Able to buy a home and send your kids to college and own a car off a single parent income.
Yeah, the meme specifically was like, what happened to a time when you could send your kids to college and buy a home all on one person's income, right? And the idea is like, why can't, like what's happening to nuclear families? And it had that like 1950s imagery, stuff like that. And when you see posts like that, you're wondering like, okay, are you going to tell me the answer? Like what happened?
Yeah, or you're just going to leave it vague.
And on accounts like this, if you look to the comments, you immediately find out that the implication is either that it's like black people being in movies now, or it's somehow women's fault, despite women having access to basically no political or economic power throughout all of American history. You're going to sit here and tell me that the reason that things economically are tougher on families than before is because women are in the workplace when men have basically ran all workplaces and all of the government for all of American history? What are we talking about?
Like it's so fucking wild. And even like out of the posts like that are more explicitly like very like right wing, even just on like the why don't we build cathedrals like this that just touch the sky anymore, you can just go to the comments and see that people are just blaming black people somehow.
Yes.
And it's like really it's just because we have massive public advertisements all over the place. Uh-huh. And like things are going on, like the building undeniably beautiful, but it's not we don't not have those because of black people. I can tell you that
it's because there's no use for that kind of art within capitalism. That's exactly. Why that stuff isn't it serves no function when the only desire in our economic system is to produce profit. And the answer to the question of why you can't survive on a single person's income anymore is capitalism.
You've been priced out of the market.
It's because
everything.
Of deregulation throughout the 1970s and 1980s under people like Ronald Reagan and our empowerment of capital to flee overseas, taking jobs away from home. Meaning that there's just like less money to go around in our economy for average people and the slow siphoning of wealth from the bottom to the top. The answer is capitalism and the protection of profit and capital over regular people. The answer isn't women being in the workplace.
Insane.
Like, what are we doing?
It's nuts. Just and any of these accounts that are just dedicated to really just the degradation of Western society, which is basically what they're doing. They're just full on. Just they're not quite there. They're not quite Nazi posting, but they're getting close. They're towing a dangerous line.
Yeah. Like if you want to understand the decline of U.S. economic preeminence, it's two things, right?
Yeah.
It's deregulation. Again, what I just described, the flight of capital overseas, tax breaks for the rich, our lacking protection for labor unions. Not only that, but actively attacking labor unions and deconstructing worker power over time. And it's our funding of the military.
Yeah.
Because we allowed billions of dollars, actually a topic of this episode.
Oh.
We allowed billions of dollars in military spending to fly overseas, which built up USD elsewhere, which means there's less here to go around. It's a complex several decades, but it's an easy phenomenon to understand. We hollowed ourselves out and expected things to just be fine.
Yeah.
Like obviously the protection of profit over literally everything else is going to starve your country out over decades. It's going to make things worse. And for some people, the fault to or what they pin the blame on is not government policies, is not neoliberal action. It's black people and women because they're afraid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, at some point, fascism really just boils down to I'm scared of people that aren't white and I'm scared of women.
Facts.
Like, that's it.
Facts.
That's it.
Not me though. But it's crazy. It's crazy because on accounts that are not as disingenuous or not disingenuous at all, but still post the same kind of things that Culture Critic posts, they'll show a picture of like a street on New York at the same location, but in different points of time. Like this is what this spot in New York or Philly looked like in the 60s, like mid 60s. And this is what it looks like now.
Right.
And you'll notice, there's a difference. It's more ugly and less beautiful. And
it all looks the same. It's all gray.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's mostly because you notice the fucking McDonald's, the Wendy's, the Burger King, and you notice the cars.
Yeah.
because cities aren't walkable anymore. Mm-hmm. And there are public advertisements on top of everything everywhere. That why would you care about the architecture anymore? Why would anyone care about building that up? Like, that's where the issue is. We've allowed capital to run rampant. And, it, you know, car-dependent society type beat.
Yeah. Well, and we used to have a thing in the 1900s called capital controls in the United States. There were laws in the book. There were policies where we controlled how capital moved. We imposed fines and penalties when capital tried to flee the country after profiting here. And that doesn't exist anymore.
No.
I think that was gone under Richard Nixon.
Oh, wow. Who'd have thought?
Yeah. Like, it's neoliberal policies that have destroyed the United States. And, like, even from a capitalist framework, if we would have maintained our kind of Keynesian market economics, that would have been better than what we engaged in throughout, you know, Ronald Reagan's administration. Started with Jimmy Carter, of course, but, you know, every president after that, really.
Especially because, like, as soon as you get rid of something like that, how do you get it back?
Right. Because you can't, right?
The moment you try to get it back, they're just going to leave because they can now.
And that's why every single politician that runs for any office at any level says they want to bring manufacturing jobs back.
Yeah.
Because it, one, harkens back to a time when people felt like things were better, when things were better for a lot of people, not necessarily like racially or gender-wise, but economically, people felt like things were better. And also, it's an attempt to try to bring back a sort of tangibility to our abstract economy.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of it, as we've talked about, is service, is the tech industry, is high profit industries that don't really produce anything real.
It's like it's a consumer market.
Yeah.
Like our economy runs off of consuming things.
Every politician says they want to bring manufacturing back, but the only real way to do that is to thoroughly regulate capital and have massive national investments in infrastructure. And that's just not going to happen under neoliberal politicians. They can't do it. The solution's not in their, I don't know, repertoire.
Mm-hmm. Especially because people that do go up there and do try to implement capital controls like that, CEOs will come out and say, I'm just fucking leaving then.
Right-wingers are,
guys, we can't. No, we can't. Please stop.
And fundamentally, the reason why our government is so, I don't know, leashed to capital is because that's what capitalism is.
Uh-huh.
That's where power is centered in society, is on the people with all of the wealth, resources, and factories, machines, etc. And if we're not willing to regulate it, if we're not willing to come together and, you know, form a public entity such as the government that's going to do that kind of stuff for us, then we're just at the behest of the modern day monarchs.
It's a crazy world we live in.
Yeah.
It's a wild world we live in.
It's all capitalism. It's not the Jews.
I'm saying,
at a base level, you got to understand that sometimes.
At the most basic level, just please.
It's not women's fault. It's not like you can't blame people that have had no political power throughout all of history for all of our problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fault of capital. It always has been for us.
It's a very clear line.
As you can tell, we're feeling a little anti-capitalist today.
100%.
But I want to welcome you all back to Head in the Office. Before we get into the episode, we're actually going to be a little bit of a pro-capitalist.
Oh.
That's a joke, of course, but I was just going to remind you all to go buy some Head in the Office merch.
Remind you to support your favorite small business.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, we're a small business of two.
Exactly.
It is really a democracy.
We're a really small business.
Uh-huh.
I can tell you
extremely
much.
Extremely small. Puny.
Basically, co-op, we both own half the show.
Teeny tiny, if you will.
Teeny tiny, super small business. Uh-huh. Really, you could only get one smaller.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's all I'm saying. You could get one smaller, but beyond supporting a small business, I would say support like your friends.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we are your friends.
Yeah,
your
I
buddies.
Would say support your real friends, the people that you like love. So,
because
I love you, like I'd support you.
We've spoken to many of you.
Exactly.
Through Discord, but if you remove that medium, it's face to face,
right?
Exactly.
Through Discord, through DMs, which it's like, that's additionally abstracted from Discord because I couldn't like hear your voice, but like still like.
I imagined it.
Exactly.
What we're trying to get to here is that you need to go buy some merch.
Exactly. You would support your friends and family. So that's like if your best friend came in like, hey, I just made some t-shirts. I think they're really cool.
Yeah.
Would you mind helping me out? You'd do it.
Yeah. We know listening right now, there's thousands of you that have not bought merch yet. If you go and do it, I'll release a video sobbing, crying, thanking you all.
Oh, 100%. Tears.
Only if you all go do it, though.
Tears
I know
swelling from my eyes, just going crazy, ugly crying. I'm fucking screaming into the mic, bro.
The link is in the description.
Uh-huh.
If you want to go buy merch, actually, it's kind of mandatory now. You have to go do it.
Yeah.
Please, just get yourself something, wear the shirt, take a picture, post on Instagram, post on your story, tag us in it. We'll repost it. We'll thank you. And we'll send you a video with tears. That's a promise. So go get yourself some merch.
You could purchase it with tears.
Uh-huh.
Like, purchase it. I'll send you like a what's that one like website you can buy like celebrities will send you a message.
I have no idea.
You could send them a script and then celebrity. We'll get one of those, right? And then people going, oh, say this. And I'll be like, oh, happy birthday, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know.
I'll send you crying, a handwritten letter. With a kiss mark on it from like lipstick. You know what I'm saying?
Put the lipstick. I'll do it with like a feather pen too. I'll dip it in ink. I'll and then write it in cursive and shit.
That's right.
Oh my God.
But only if you head over to headintheoffice.com and purchase yourself some merch. We got the Angel Investor t-shirts. Mm-hmm. You can get a sticker sheet from us. You can get a hat from us.
The stickers go crazy.
Number one geopolitical podcast. Come on now. All kinds of stuff.
Somebody in Discord put us on a water bottle. That's crazy.
Exactly. Something for everybody. You can get little stickers of me and Gage sitting on our little chairs.
Get some dad caps. They're gas.
Little stickers for a little business. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Just go over, get yourself some merch. I think we've beaten the horse enough.
Probably.
But also, if you want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/headintheofficepod. Get early access to our episodes, early access to everything that we're doing, and our eternal love and gratitude.
100%.
That's one of the things. We should add that as a benefit.
Oh, that'd be good. Like we're friends. Mm-hmm. Oh, we could like...
Our
like,
friendship.
$3 acquaintances, $5. We're like, cool.
Everyone wants like a trio of friends, right? Everyone does.
Because it's like, realistically, like, we're talking to you. You're part of the conversation.
He could be with you. You know what I'm saying?
I know you talk back when you're listening on your little commutes to work. Come on now.
If you haven't been convinced yet, I don't know what to tell you.
Me neither.
Other than that, though, you can check us out on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Head over to the Upwire and subscribe.
Yes.
Media network that we're a part of. And take a look at their content as well. Lots of cool people over there. Cool. Maybe we'll do some collabs with those folks pretty soon. That'd be a good idea for an episode.
Let me show, while we're speaking about ways to become our friends and all that stuff, why don't we talk about the people that are supporting the show through Apple and leaving us some 5-star reviews?
We got four of those to read today.
Oh my
God. Or three
God,
of those
so
to read
good.
Today. And we are eternally grateful for everyone that leaves us a review. The first one here by Claw or Clay the Person. Best political podcast. They say, I started listening to you guys in December, and a few minutes into the Hitto 2022 award show, I knew I'd found the best political podcast. We put a lot of effort into that one.
I'm dressed up.
Exactly. I go to a school full of insane conservatives, so I always look forward to Wednesdays. Sadly, I am a Wednesday weenie when I can hear good takes from two smart leftists. Keep up the great work in the long episodes. P.S. Since I'm half Brazilian, I feel like it's my duty to share the great news that our ex-president Bolsonaro was just declared unelectable until 2030. Crazy how you can just do that
Let's
in your
go.
Country. Brazil, not a shining beacon of democracy, I would say. Crazy how you guys have more democratic accountability measures than we do on a president who tried to do a coup. Anyway.
Crazy. I digress, but this is long, like, side note on the long episodes. It's crazy how it feels like, you know, like when we only have like an hour of news to bring you all, it's like it's not even worth your time.
Exactly.
But when we have like, I don't know, an hour 30 to 2 hours worth of news, everybody's watching them.
Yeah, it is
crazy. I don't
crazy.
Get it.
It's weird. Usually we expect, like we want to, or I guess before, we wanted to keep it like around an hour. We thought too long, people won't want to listen. Uh-huh. But we strangely get more views on the longer episodes.
It's a wild world, wild, wacky, zany world.
You're just encouraging me to talk nonsense for even longer.
So now you're encouraging these Twitter reviews every week.
Exactly. If you hate it, it's your fault.
Right. Yeah. Right. Speaking of next review. By input lag. These guys made me trans my gender.
Oh, shit.
I started watching in late 2021, specifically the Senate degradation episode, as a cis man, a year and a half and a few 5-star reviews later, and I'm a trans woman from Sasha.
We did that. That was us.
That's us. That's our fault. That's me molding your brain and turning the cis boy part to the girl part.
I was switching the wires around.
I was in there rewiring with every word I say. I'm just a rhetorician like that.
That'd be some gas fan art that someone could create. Just us like meddling with the brains a little bit. Just like scary in the background. Like, you know, like the anti-communist propaganda from like the Cold War era.
Facts.
But it's us in there with someone's brain transing your gender.
Oh, that's so good.
Because that's what we do every week.
Because it's like we did it now. We can finally say we did it.
Yeah.
It's our mission.
I mean, if anyone ever accused us of covering trans news all the time, or I guess attacks on trans people all the time, that would be an adequate attack. We do that.
We do that.
If someone were just to make a propaganda piece about us doing that, I couldn't say it's propaganda.
That's what
really.
I'm saying. If, I don't know, this landed on Ben Shapiro's desk somehow, and he's like, wow, look at these guys made this person become transgender. Isn't that crazy? I'd run it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That'd be the new intro.
Yeah. I'm not beyond it, really.
Frankly, the goal of the show, dare I say.
Last review is from Flounder 2015, The Best Boys. They say, As a couple week old Wednesday weenie, I gotta say I love this podcast. It's so refreshing to see people my age talk politics with well thought out points from a leftist perspective. I love listening to these boys, learning more on my journey from the right, and have been diving into left wing content. Leaving the right.
Oh,
congrats to you. Living in the Bible Belt, it's like a breath of fresh air. Believe me when I say it's not a parasocial relationship. Love you guys. We love you too. Keep up the great work. Hopefully soon I'll be able to graduate and join the Sunday supremacists.
Oh, believe me, I know it's not a parasocial relationship, but it seems like you don't since you're a Wednesday weenie.
Yeah, exactly.
Friends support friends, so I'll leave it at that.
Could I just borrow, say, $10 a month for a little while? Just like bum a couple of bucks off of you, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, bro, can I bum a cig? Like,
speaking of like leaving the right or abandoning your political beliefs, we posted a TikTok of the Anna Kasparian segment we did last week, yeah, talking about TYT and stuff. And so many people in the comment, lots of people were agreeing with us, of uh-huh. course, because our position was correct. But there were a lot of people also in the comments saying something like, well, she's leaving the left because, you know, people have been attacking her. And it's I just want to say really quickly, first, it's not, well, I guess you could say it's an attack, but if we're criticizing you for having a wrong opinion, you got to debate the opinion, not just like abandon your positions.
Yeah.
And also, it's not fucking high school. You don't like leave friend groups in politics because they're attacking you or criticizing you. You defend your positions. And if you're changing your positions, then you're changing your politics.
Yeah.
It's not high school. You don't leave because people are mean to you. Like, if we just left because some leftists were mean to us, then we were never leftists to begin
with.
You
don't have any actual convictions at that point.
Yeah.
Like, attacking her seems kind of strong. It's like nobody's like attacking her personally.
Right.
Everyone's just like, Anna, this is a very bad take.
Yeah.
Like, you're attacking her bad politics.
And someone said, like, oh, you should educate, not criticize. And it's like
that's,
she doesn't need to be educated. You know what I mean?
And it's like, so many people are.
Yeah.
She knows. And can you not criticize bad points anymore?
Right.
Like those aren't separate things. Like, I get the whole, like, nobody's going out and, like, necessarily canceling mm-hmm. Anna Kasparian. Everyone's just realizing, like, whoa, this is a bad take. And she's kind of had a recent history of making a bunch of bad takes. Like, there's a really weird through line here.
It's not unprompted. She did it. Exactly. Like, this isn't just out of nowhere.
It's not an isolated incident.
It's her repeatedly bringing attention to herself by having bad takes, by getting a Fox News article published about how bad her takes have been recently.
And it's like at that point, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And rightfully, you should be criticized for that.
The real decline of Western civilization is when we can't criticize people anymore.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Cancel culture, brother. Let me tell you.
Getting into the news, though, we got lots of stuff to talk about this week. We're gonna talk about some strikes a mm-hmm. little bit later on in the mm-hmm. episode. We got a new debt relief plan by Biden that I wouldn't say is anything perfect, but we'll get to it.
Mm-hmm.
First thing we got to talk about, though, we got a new defense spending bill coming up. It's another year. That means there's another $800 billion+ that mm-hmm. we got to spend
that means
on our military operations.
Increase in military spending.
Yeah, we got to cover the next defense spending bill. It just passed the House last Friday, and right now it's heading to the Senate. Will probably be voted on next week. These bills are really large, but they tend to move pretty quickly. Uh-huh. There's a lot of stuff in this bill. Totals almost $900 billion total. And it's, I think, the largest National Defense Authorization Act of all time again.
Always, every single year.
So we get another big NDAA.
It's not even a flex at this point.
And of course, still more than the next like 10 countries combined, mm-hmm. What they spend on military spending, including China and Russia, notably. There's a lot of controversy in this bill, and you could tell because it was only voted 219 to 210.
Oh.
That means a lot of Democrats weren't voting for it. Four of them did switch sides and vote for it, and there's only two votes to spare because you need 218 to pass anything in the House. It was mostly a party line vote, but two Democrats said, let's make this happen.
Of course they did. So tell us, Jeremy, what contentious things were in this bill?
Most of them were amendments
that
came, after the bill was introduced. Then, you know, you have a period to add amendments from, you know, all the representatives have a chance to add things into the bill that they'd like to see. And I have a short list of some of the more notable ones that I found when reading about this. We can do a quick speed run. So, in this bill, Republican Ralph Norman introduced an amendment to eliminate all DEI programs and personnel from the Pentagon, which passed 214 to 213.
Oh, of course. Of course. We wanna,
so that was one of the big ones.
In the military, DEI is really DIE, because when you have a woke military, you lose wars.
And our people die. Americans die.
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly.
Start thinking,
DEI, and we're like, die.
Yeah.
That's what's going on.
There's another amendment passed to prevent the DOD from paying for any abortion protection services, including travel expenses.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty sick. You know, a medical procedure that can't be covered under the DOD healthcare plan. Pretty awesome. From CNN, it says, quote, the House also passed an amendment that would bar a healthcare program for service members from covering hormone treatments for transgender individuals and gender confirmation surgeries, which is like, we're talking about adults.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We're talking about healthcare for adults. There's no children in the DOD.
Like, why not? Like, this is like their plan, like their healthcare plan, yeah, too. It's not even like you can necessarily say, like, obviously, yeah, any money that goes into them because they're federal government employees was paid for by tax dollars. But this is further abstracted from the usual, like, I don't want my tax dollars going to fund Planned Parenthood.
Well, yeah.
There are many layers beyond that here. Like, it's pretty much like their shit. Like, this is weird. And
notably, people have pointed out that your healthcare plan can cover things like, you know, hair transplants, or it can cover Viagra pills, for example, which is a big thing when Trump banned transgender people from being in the military generally. But yeah, I mean, it's completely silly. And usually when Republicans are talking about banning things like gender affirming care, they can hide behind, we want to protect children. Mm-hmm. But with this, it's just adults, and you're just blocking their healthcare plan from covering things that adults need for themselves. Like, what the fuck are we doing?
I don't even understand. Like,
it's transphobia,
like,
of course.
It's obviously just all roots down to they just hate trans people, but there's not even, like, a veneer that they can hide behind here.
Yeah, no.
There's not even, like, because what? Oh, no, there are more trans men in the military. You complain about women being in the military. Why wouldn't you want them to get testosterone?
Yeah, like, I thought that made them better fighters.
I thought that made them stronger. I thought that's what you were complaining about, was they couldn't compete physically.
Also, it's like, what, all 10 trans people in the DOD out of like however many million work for the, like, come on now. What are we talking about? What are we doing? And then the last amendment I have here is from our friend, the friend of the show, Lauren Boebert.
Nice.
She passed an amendment that blocks military schools from purchasing or having, quote, pornographic or radical gender ideology books. Which is great, because again, right, adults, like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like adults.
Like, what military school, like, adults can't watch porn now?
Well, no, I think it's like having books in like the military libraries, like no more gender queer in the military libraries.
Oh no.
No more books from like Malcolm X, I guess.
I bet the spine on like that book is just ran through because so many people are checking it out.
Yeah, exactly.
At West Point.
Yeah. Like, once again, you know, they have plausible deniability when they're talking about high schools, middle schools, and they're talking about, you know, books that are indoctrinating
kids. They're talking about minors.
But when we're talking about adults in a military school having access to books that have just been published, what it comes down to is they just want to censor these ideas. They don't want anyone having access to these ideas, but they're going to hide behind the protection of children as a foot in the door to extend their hateful policies. It's pretty bad.
Pretty bad. Pretty wild. Because, like, who fucking cares?
Like, exactly.
West Point are reading the gay book.
This is a choke point for our military? Is it gender ideology books? Come on now. What are we talking about? All of that's pretty insane, but there is one last amendment that I have to talk about that actually failed, and this is going to hurt a little bit.
Really?
This is going to be a little tough for us as your resident Marjorie Taylor Greene haters.
Yeah.
But she was right for once. Broken clock and all that.
Exactly. Yeah, broken clock. She was right for once. Throwing up shit at the wall.
This needs a little bit of context. So the government for a little while has been considering sending cluster bombs to Ukraine to support the war effort, right? This is, Biden's given a variety of reasons for wanting to do this. One of them, I think the most prominent one, is that munitions are just generally running low in Ukraine, and so we want to send them more to help out, which is something that we've been in favor of, to be clear. But cluster bombs are especially bad and especially destructive because a lot of the time they just harm civilians. For all of the times that cluster bombs will, like, you know, help in a military defense, a lot of them won't go off. Some 10% of them will be launched out of a plane or whatever, and they won't go off, and then civilians will just stumble upon them and, like, blow their leg off or something.
Cool.
Because some of the bombs don't explode on impact with the ground or infrastructure or whatever it may be. Laos is an extreme example back during the Vietnam War.
Oh, like mines and shit.
Well, I think they're cluster bombs. Cluster mines might be a little different.
I know there's a huge problem with mines in Laos and Vietnam.
Laos and Cambodia, we launched tons of cluster mines and cluster bombs. And still to this day, children and just like regular civilians are finding these bombs, picking them up and losing limbs or dying, right?
Uh-huh.
Because these bombs have incredibly, they just have a high rate of failure, which means that later civilians are going to find them and die, which obviously is not what you want to do when you're waging a defense of something.
Exactly. And it's crazy because you consider a high rate of failure with these, it's like particularly egregious because there's no way to really cleanly sweep these.
Exactly.
There's no way to just go through and pick up the cluster bombs. If you've ever seen like the machine, the like big ass truck that they use to actually like, I don't know, de-bomb an area. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the fuck to describe it. It's just a big ass truck with like a huge fucking whip on it. Mm-hmm. That's like, I don't know, 200 feet long, and it's just, and then bombs blow up in front of it. Like, there's no clean way to do any of this. Exactly. They're so destructive. Just destroy anything in their wake, really.
Yeah. Well, and our secret operation in Laos was like, what, more than 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And kids are still losing limbs because there's still mines and cluster bombs that, you know, litter areas in Laos, because Laos was like one of the most bombed countries ever in history by us, by the way.
Yeah.
Cambodia as well. Side note, Henry Kissinger, kind of the guy who did all of this, I don't know how he's not in prison. Bro's still alive, by the way. He's 100.
I thought he died.
He's 100. I wish. Bro sucks. Killed so many people.
For
just
real.
Just gets to be a free man.
Insane.
Yeah,
bro.
He really won. He really won.
Shout out war criminals.
Anyway, more than 100 countries have banned cluster munitions because, of course, they kill innocent people so often. They're a bad weapon to use. Truly man-made horror beyond our comprehension.
Yes.
And Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced an amendment to prevent cluster bombs from going to Ukraine, which is something I'm actually in support of.
Absolutely.
I don't want that to happen.
It's crazy when Marjorie Taylor Greene is like, I don't know, the arbiter of morality within the yeah, legislature.
So this amendment failed, and I don't think
failed.
The amendment failed. It didn't pass because Congress wants to send cluster bombs to, I think it was only like 90 people voted in favor of it. It was pretty resounding failure.
Okay.
And the reason I think she did this not because she has some like moral stance against blowing limbs off of children.
Oh, absolutely not.
But because she wants Russia to win because she's a fascist, right?
It's also
that's
just,
it. That's all it is.
It's just an extension of her whole of like right wingers in general whole like, oh, why are we sending money to Ukraine? Yeah. We don't help people here, but we also don't want to help people here though.
Exactly. Right.
That part's just really quiet.
She just wants Ukraine to lose, not because she wants to protect civilians in Ukraine moving forward. That's the only reason. Cluster munitions bad. That's the take here. But unfortunately, it looks like it might go to those munitions might go to Ukraine. But of course, this has to pass the Senate first. Which I don't know if it'll be held up there or not. It'll probably pass.
I don't think cluster bombs are a big ticket issue that voters are worried about, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone in the Senate's really going
to
care.
Yeah, just committing awful things to civilian populations.
Mm-hmm.
And Ukraine has come out and said, like, oh, we can handle it. Like, don't worry about it.
We'll
make sure it works. It's like, yeah,
that's what we said.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, there's not any real consideration. It's like if we can limit civilian deaths, we should try to do that.
Exactly.
And like, one way to do that is by not giving them cluster bombs.
Where's the oversight when it comes to like, oh, we can handle it?
Right.
Like, there's already little to no oversight when it comes to anything that we've sent to Ukraine. Again, I'm generally in support of it, but there are some aspects that are a little like, whoa, a little wonky.
I mean, yeah, for sure. Like, again, generally we're in favor. Like, you send something else, right?
Exactly.
Like,
send
I'm in favor of
else.
You sending
I'm in favor of
what
the
they
support.
Need for defense, yeah.
But there's like, famously, there is very little oversight on the things that we do send over there. So mm-hmm. when we're sending something that's particularly dangerous, it's a little...
Yeah. We don't. It's like you don't need to.
Yeah.
You just don't need to. There's other ways that we can help that we should be helping, and it doesn't have to be these weapons that do untold damage to civilian populations for decades into the future. It just doesn't have to be that way. We don't need to do that. But it's heading to the Senate now. We'll see if it passes, and we'll see if Biden signs it into law. No partial veto for him.
Oh,
all or nothing.
Damn.
So we'll see what happens. Moving on to our next news story.
Absolutely.
We're on strike watch again.
Mm-hmm.
This time we're talking about more Hollywood more people in Hollywood striking.
That's
the
right.
Actors this time specifically.
It's time SAG.
And before we get into this, there's I think also Teamsters is about to strike, which is a much bigger
Teamsters
union.
Teamsters at UPS, 340,000 people. I got it in the notes right
okay,
after this
cool.
are about to strike.
So a couple of months ago, we covered the start of the Writers Guild strike. You all may remember that episode a little while ago. It's a strike that's still continuing to this day, still causing problems for Hollywood. But just last Friday, the Screen Actors Guild American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, also known as SAG-AFTRA or just SAG, mm-hmm. voted to go on strike after negotiations collapsed between them and various studios as well as streaming services, which has been a significant hurdle for workers. This means that some 65,000 actors are now on strike in addition to the 11,000 writers that are still striking today. And SAG technically represents like around 160,000 workers, but this contract and strike only applies to the TV and film workers, not people in news or in like video games, for example.
I don't think it applies to like stage workers, or maybe it does. I don't know.
Something like that. It's pretty specific, but it's like the contract that this covers are the people that are going on strike.
Yeah.
It's not everybody in the union. Now, the strike was authorized way back in June. I think it was like 99. 9% of the union voted in favor of the strike. But it's been a long time coming, and it just like got announced that it was going to happen after they passed the date beyond which negotiations were supposed to be concluded. Mm-hmm. So the strike just began last Friday. This effectively grinds Hollywood to a halt. Which is good. I think it's good.
Pretty sick.
Yeah.
Pretty sick. Because like they could get away with doing a lot of things without the writers just by continuing to go through with like producers, directors, and the actors. But now if you don't have anybody get in front of the camera, you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You're not doing shit.
Now there's a couple of main contentions that we should talk about. They're very similar to the Writers Guild, by the way. The first one, and I think the biggest one, is the use of AI. The union claimed that, quote, "They propose that our background performers should be able to be scanned, get paid for one day's pay, and the company should be able to own that scan and the likeness for the rest of eternity without consideration."
You can just sell your face to Hollywood for like $150 and then never get paid for your like. They could do whatever they want with your likeness.
Forever.
It's gone. You don't own your face anymore. Come on, guys. It's like evil.
Yeah, and there's other like provisions they want to protect them against the use of AI in film and TV shows, etc. But that was one of the ones I found to be the most stark, because it's like, what the hell?
That is so particularly
dystopia,
just egregious.
Yeah,
like how does like a normal person like look? You got to be so blinded by like greed. Like you have to be a CEO to think something like that up. You know what I'm saying? No regular like earthly human being could think of that.
Your greed has corrupted you.
And be like, that's cool.
Yeah, your greed has corrupted you. The second one was residuals, which is a very similar thing to the Writers Guild. This is basically recurring payments that you make as an actor or a writer after a show increases in popularity, right? Yeah. The more views, the more you get. Or for streaming services, I think it was like the more people brought to the platform because of your show, the more money you get. But that like the equation was very fucked, which is a point in the strike right now. From CBS, they said, quote, "Half of SAG-AFTRA's members earn less than $26,000 a year from acting, the minimum required to qualify for health insurance through the guild," which is like nothing in Hollywood.
It's fucking insane.
Which is like nothing in most places in the country.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, especially in California, though. Like, in L.A., places like that, it costs so much money just to live.
Yeah.
That's insane. And, like, specifically with the residual things, Adam Conover of Adam Ruins Everything fame was just on Hassan's stream this week, and he talked about how when he was writing for a show, Adam Ruins Everything, when it got picked up by True TV, a 20-episode season paid him and all the other writers on the show about $20,000 in residuals because it was airing on TV. They got that. They got the ad revenue. But then when he did a 6-episode show for Netflix, he got a couple $100.
That's crazy. How do you live off that?
Exactly. Absolutely insane. And he like made it a point to address that. Like, I know it sounds like we're like a lot when you're getting $20,000 for the show, but it's so long in between work that it's nothing.
Yeah.
Like
it gets used up.
You're barely making your year with that because you're waiting for gigs. You don't know if you're going to get another gig. You don't know if your next gig will be popular, if you'll get any residuals off it. It's a really tumultuous field. It's ups and downs. Yeah. Like,
well, especially in a state like California, if you want to live close to your work, California is an extremely expensive place to live, especially in places like LA. So if you want to live close to your work, you're going to be struggling. You're going to need quite a bit of money. And although there are actors and writers that do make tons of money, there are also lots of people on the bottom end that struggle to get by. And that's the point of the strike.
They are not the vast majority of people. Like your fucking Brad Pitts are not the vast majority of people. Most of these actors that are going to benefit from the strike are not your Angelina Jolie's, your George Clooney's. They're the background actors, and they're the people that have smaller supporting roles in regular like television shows and shit.
Yeah.
That's the people that we're helping. Those are the people that are struggling. That's what this is about. And I feel like that gets obfuscated because you think of actors and you think of the big A-listers and you think of Robert Downey Jr. getting like $50 million to appear in Spider-Man Homecoming for 10 minutes. And you're like, oh, wow, look at these liberals just whining.
Yeah.
But that's not what it is. And we need to be very clear about that.
Yeah. These people are workers, and a lot of them do not get paid the multi-million dollars for contracts and movies. Like, it just
half of them don't even have life insurance.
Yeah, exactly.
Or health insurance,
because
they don't
just
even make $26,000. Yeah.
Now, I've seen a lot of people, and maybe not a lot, but I've seen some people hate on the SAG and WGA strike. It usually goes something like, it's a meme they post where it's like, pay me more, and then it's a screenshot of some show they don't like a line from She-Hulk or something like that. You know, it's the idea is like, oh, you want to get paid more, but this sucks. You know what I mean?
It's still labor.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is like a couple of points on that is like even if you personally hate the show, it's labor and it's producing profit in the millions for these businesses. Mm-hmm. The writers, actors, and everyone involved in the production deserve to take part in that profit making a lot more than they are right now. Also, especially in places like Marvel and Disney, when writers and VFX artists, too, of course, are worked to the bone with harsh deadlines. Like, yeah, products are going to suck.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like the Flash movie, for example, looked awful.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible looking movie. Yeah. But that's because the people that were designing a lot of the CGI were given very short turnaround windows and were not paid very well. So, of course, the product is going to be terrible, mm-hmm. which is also a contention within the union strike. So you should support the union strike if you want better products.
Yeah, no. And it's also just like this. Oh, look at this. She-Hulk sucked. So why should they get any more money? So you still watched it.
Yeah.
It still brought you by being a part of the larger Marvel ecosystem. It still got your subscription to Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Like you are still paying the money to be able to watch. Watch it, but the people who worked hard on the show aren't seeing sense of that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this one actress in Orange is the New Black. I don't know exactly what her role was, but it may have been a supporting role or like a side role, but she was in very many episodes and she got like a $300 check
from residuals.
It's like, what is going on?
Yeah.
What is going on? That was one of the most popular shows in the world for a while.
And maybe most importantly, like, sure, there may be some bad shows that have come out, especially like from MCU. There's been like a lot of bad movies and shit, like the stuff that I don't especially like.
Yeah.
But most importantly, they're also, these same writers and actors and everybody else involved in production are also creating things that you love.
Exactly.
TV shows, movies that you really love that you watch over and over. It's like, it's the same people, or if it's not the same people, it's the same workers that are represented in this union that is now striking.
I think that's just a broader problem with Hollywood and shit. Like Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
I wasn't a fan, personally. Like, for many reasons, I just didn't think it was a great movie. Brie Larson's fine.
Yeah.
She gets so much hate for that role. Like, she didn't get an Oscar nomination for her performance in The Room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come
Good
on.
Movie, by the way.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Yeah. So now both writers and actors are on strike in Hollywood, effectively, as we said, grinding the industry to a halt in the studios. Not very happy about it. Just days before the actors started their strike, a studio executive was reported saying this, quote, "The end game is to allow things to drag on until union members start losing their apartments and losing their houses." Another business insider called it, quote, "a cruel but necessary evil."
Oh,
textbook
no.
villain shit.
They've
textbook
taken
villain shit.
They've taken the caviar-filled mother-of-pearl spoon out of my hand, therefore I'm gonna take their home away.
Yeah.
Like, no, if these things go up, I wouldn't be able to buy my umpteenth bit of caviar this year with my creme brulee and my fancy spoons and fancy everything because I make millions and millions of millions of dollars as these entertainment CEOs. So I'm gonna make this writer who makes $26,000 a year lose their house.
I mean, the only thing more evil they could have said is like, we're going to keep this going until their children start
to starve.
We're
going to kill them.
Yeah. Like, well, we're going to wait till they die. Like, they start dropping because they can't afford to live. Like, it is literally taking the mentality of an oil baron and mapping it onto the Hollywood industry.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fucking insane.
And it's also like, you think if they're homeless, they're still going to produce good products?
Right.
Like, come on here. Like, there's so many bits we're missing out on. Like, you are literally only focused on the financials to the point where you're willing to, I don't know, cripple someone's life?
Yeah.
And not even realize what it's going to do to your own product that you claim to care so much about the money it produces?
The profit mentality is a brain disease.
It is.
It makes you stupider.
It
straight up makes you stupider. And as always, right, like, obviously, this is one thing I like about this strike, not that I like that the strike has to happen, but one thing I like about it is that a lot of the people in the strike are already very prominent figures in pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one way when people see a strike, they're like, a lot of time people might see a strike and they might fall to the reactionary reasoning where it's like, oh, but you know, this strike is stopping you from being able to like go to the grocery store or, you know, get your product on time from Amazon or something. But with this, it's like people that you know, maybe that you like from your favorite TV shows and
movies.
People
you're fans of.
Yeah, people that you're fans of. And when you see this, it kind of, I don't know. I think it encourages people to be in solidarity with it.
Because it's like,
I think it's good optically is what I'm trying to say.
It's good optically in the sense that like these people are all media trained.
Yeah.
Like the person at the Amazon warehouse who is trying to unionize isn't necessarily media trained, but the actor is. It's really their whole job to sell their like products and these ideas and things. So when you couple those two forces, that and a strike, they're going to sell the idea pretty well to people who are fans of them. People who run their fan accounts.
It's their job to be popular and very dramatic.
Exactly.
And they're good at doing it. Right?
They're amazing at doing it.
And it's like, this is obviously, every strike is a microcosm Every strike is a microcosm of kind of, you know, how capitalism works mm-hmm. as a system. But as always, of course, your bosses, the people that reside at the top of corporate hierarchies, they view you with literally nothing but disdain. Uh-huh. And they would sooner see you be homeless, sooner see you not able to afford food than adjust compensation and benefits to your liking. And that's like how the system works.
Wild.
Yeah.
Absolutely fucking wild. I don't understand. And thankfully this caused like a huge bit of like public outrage. Like mm-hmm. we're not the only people covering this. This actually made big news and it resulted in a really big like inflow of money to the strike fund.
Yeah.
So that was dope. But it's like, why are we here?
Yeah.
Why did it get this far to begin mm-hmm. with? Why can these people not say this and I don't know, like immediately be ousted?
Yeah.
Like, where's the French tenacity?
Yeah, as always. And like, same thing with the interview that we did with Meg Burt from GEO and the strike that's currently happening at the University of Michigan. As long as these hierarchies exist, where the person at the top wants to profit the most, and the people under them have to work in order to survive and need money in order to survive, there's always going to be a conflict. That is the core conflict of the system, right? The people at the top need you to work, and they're going to create conditions such that you rely on them to survive. And as long as that exists, there's always going to be conflict in the heart of the system. And that's just how the system works, right?
Yeah.
It's the private ownership of the means of production to produce profit privately for individual owners. And those owners need workers. And as long as they need workers, there's always going to be conflict. Always.
Insane power imbalance.
Yeah.
It's palpable, really. It's so easy to understand once you just like open your eyes to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God.
And like this strike and other strikes we've covered, they're good signs. Again, not because we want strikes to happen, not because we want workers to be getting paid so little that they feel like they need to strike, but because I think it's a necessary part of clawing back power from employers. Mm-hmm. And if you're one of those doomer leftists that kind of, you know, you get feeling bad and down a lot about kind of the state of where we're at, you look to the past and feel like revolutions and I don't know, potential change for the future where workers have more power is a thing of the past, I would just point you to all the strikes that are happening recently. I think it's a sign that the conflict, the struggle, the class war is still well alive.
Yeah.
Again, the conflict at the heart of capitalism hasn't disappeared. And there are millions, if not hundreds of millions of people still willing to fight to make things better. And if that doesn't give you at least a little bit of hope, I don't know what's going to.
In fact, it's like while labor overall is still down from where it once was, we're ticking up.
Mm-hmm.
We're ticking up and there's a lot of stuff going on. A strike that we haven't covered is I think the hotel worker strike in California. I don't know too much about it, but they've been doing a lot of good shit over there. They're underpaid, overworked, and they've just been striking at random times.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've just been one weekend they're just done for.
Yeah.
And it's there's a lot of movement going on. I feel a lot of people are starting to realize that they deserve better.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a good segue into the UPS workers strike.
Okay.
Because UPS workers were literally the backbone of the country during the pandemic, mm-hmm. right? Everybody was online shopping. We live in a consumerist economy.
Yeah.
But even separate, broadly speaking, from just you and your own, I don't know, fucking Amazon purchases, UPS workers have made up over 6% of the country's GDP in transportation.
That's a lot.
And a recent report just came out by the Anderson Economic Group that said that a 10-day UPS worker strike, which has already been authorized and will happen on August 1st if they don't reach an agreement, mm-hmm. will cost the U.S. economy $7.1 billion, making it the most expensive strike in U.S. history. The second most expensive strike, GM in 2019, lasted for 6 weeks and was only like $4 billion.
Wow.
And that was crazy. So this 10 days, a week and a half, $7.1 billion gone. That's about $4.1 billion away from just the general economy itself and almost $1 billion represented in actual losses to the company itself.
Good.
When you're staring at that, how do you not say, oh shit, it's really just cheaper to pay them what they want?
Yeah.
Because while we covered it a minute ago, I'm not exactly sure on the specifics of the contract. I know key contentions were, I think they had to work a lot of split shifts.
Yep.
Which were really fucked. Like,
it was like first and third. You'd have to go to both.
What?
You get like 4 hours of sleep in
between. How do you do that? What's going on? There's a two-tiered wage system between part-timers and full-timers, which is really fucked that they're trying to fight for. They're overall just fighting for better pay because they are realizing now that they deserve their proportionate share of what they bring to the American economy. You know, 6% of the GDP.
Yeah.
Nuts.
I mean, yeah, if we could have it our way, it'd be all of it, right? Because the workers are the ones producing the profit at the base level. But of course, you know, we live in a capitalist economy. So, and all the unions that exist today are, you know, unions that focus on negotiating, not mm-hmm. like the violent overthrow of the capitalist system. Of course, we're going to be in favor of them clawing back more and more power. Of course, benefits and pay is important, but if strikes can be successful, I think the one thing that they're really successful in is clawing power and confidence away from the you know, the upper class, the C-suite managerial class that tries to snuff out union power. Ultimately, I think the reason that they don't just cave and save the U.S. economy, the executives, I mean, is because any concession to worker power is terrifying to bosses.
It's got to be. Yeah. It's got to be hard to relinquish that control that you have over people when you literally control their entire lives by scheduling them, you know, split shifts first and third. You control so much. It's so disproportionate. They can do nothing to you. Mm-hmm. But when they can even get that little, like, nick in, it's scary and it hurts.
Well, yeah, and that, and I also think something that you've brought up before when we've covered strikes, I think there is still the psychological element to being an employer.
Yeah.
I mean, for UPS, you become like a monarch of 6% of the US GDP, right? Like, you become a miniature feudal lord because you have control over all of these people. You get to direct how they live. And usually when a monarch starts to lose power or people try to rank power away from them, they don't react very well.
It's a little scorched earth type beat going on. It's, you, like, know what I mean? It's
no, this crazy. Is mine. Like, I own this.
Yeah,
it's not
I
for
own
you.
This company.
You deserve
you
to
just
be where
work
you were.
Here. Yeah. You're just a worker. Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous. And 340,000 people are about to strike because of how greedy these people are. Teamsters, per CNN, Teamsters has reported, just to, you know, contextualize this all in case, I don't know, you're at the back of UPS and you're really batting for them.
Yeah.
Over the last 5-year period, you know what I mean? In case you're really worried about UPS's profits, over the last 5 years, the last contract that they had, their overall revenue has almost doubled.
Oh, wow.
So I think this is their asks are all pretty deserving, just on the merit of the asks themselves, but also on the merit of they brought this money to them.
Oh, yeah.
And they worked hard over the pandemic. They didn't get hazard pay over the pandemic. Like, and that's all they want is just to be recognized and paid appropriately and paid fairly.
Yeah.
I saw some people on TikTok complaining like, oh, you make $47 an hour. Like, that's more than I make. Yeah, but they work 60-hour weeks.
Yeah. And they're also, of course, as you just mentioned, producing record profit for the company. Yeah. You got to remember that a lot of the companies that are receiving strikes now recorded record profits during the pandemic.
And they bragged about it.
And they bragged about it. And then they come back and say, oh, but we can't raise wages $8.
Although profits are like purely extra money that we got, like everything's already paid for and this is all extra.
Profit is when you subtract operation costs. That's what profit
I would
is.
Know. I've run a small business.
Exactly.
it's all extra money that can go wherever you want it to go.
I'm about to go on strike. I'm going to be picketing outside of the studio.
Pay me more. I'm going to come home and picket.
Yeah. Now, look, of course, lots of strikes are going on. They've been going on for the past couple of years. And I think it's like, what, 11% of the U.S. Workforce is unionized?
Something like
Very
that.
Tiny amount.
Yeah.
Not nearly where it needs to be. And of course, the labor movement, if you can even really call it like a concise labor movement, isn't organized nationally. There's no like central organization that's happening. There's no general strike that's happening. But it's still millions of people that are fighting to make their workplace conditions better. And I think, again, if you're one of those leftists that feels down about things, that feels like things just can't get better, the conflict embedded, as we said, within the relationship between owning class to working class is still there.
Yeah.
And people are still willing to do something about it. They're still compelled structurally to do something about it. And as long as that conflict exists, as long as we acknowledge that there's something wrong with the way we're doing things, I think there's hope for a better future. And you should feel like there's hope.
Exactly. And how can, like, the CEOs really just shoot themselves in the ass when they go out and say egregious shit like, oh, we want them to lose their homes. Like, that's, we don't want a roof over them and their kids' heads.
That's the type of shit that we would accuse them of saying. You know
that's
what I mean?
Type of shit that I would satirize,
yeah,
in a skit.
Yeah.
I'd be like, "Oh, we'll make them lose their home." Come on, like it's so beyond parody, really. Yeah. How can that not inspire you to be like, "Damn, bro, my boss thinks of me like that too."
Yeah,
because they do.
I mean, like, fundamentally, the only thing that's going to save the U.S. economy right now is one massive investment in infrastructure to make it so people can like go and spend money, and also workers clawing back more and more power. Because that's going to deliver more money for people to go and spend. Like, if we want to talk about things that are actually going to help the U.S. economy, that's what's got to happen. And if you want, like, if you want to look at history, again, if you're still feeling like a doomer, you want to look at history, this future of worker power has been attempting to burst through for decades now.
Yeah.
And at every turn, it has been snuffed out somehow. It's happened in this country. It's happened when we squash socialist movements overseas in Latin America, et cetera. But it's a future that still wants to be born.
Yeah.
It has been aborted at every single turn, that has been prevented from truly growing and developing by the people that hold all the power in society.
It happened last year with the railroad strike.
Yeah. the history of socialism or even just worker control of the means of production, or if you want to consider that in an abstract way, is the history of failure. Mm-hmm. But not because the ideas can't stand on their own, not because they're not good ideas, but because those with power have attempted or have successfully attempted to squash any chance at socialism being real.
Yeah.
That's the history of it. And you shouldn't be hopeless because of that. You should know that you should have confidence in those ideals because they're so powerful that the social forces that exist today and have existed throughout history have tried so hard to prevent it from ever coming to fruition.
All they have to do is sit back in their fancy fucking Herman Miller chairs and mm-hmm. do nothing while we starve. We have to constantly claw for any little win that we want.
Yeah.
The imbalance is crazy. Any little win is huge in context.
Yeah. And you should just like axiomatically, you should want to do what pisses rich people off.
Real.
Just like a fundamental baseline belief, axiomatic belief.
In fact, like one, because, you know, obviously it's good for two, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
and if there's any reason to do anything, it would be because it's like kind of funny.
If I had to list my axiomatic beliefs, right? It's like have empathy for others.
Yeah.
Maximize happiness for others and piss rich people off purposefully.
Yes.
Like those are the base beliefs upon which I build all of my other politics. You know what I mean? That's where everything
unwavering
else comes
convictions
from.
Yeah. That I have.
Anyway, strike news is generally good.
Yes.
Don't be a doomer about it. Things can get better. Be hopeful, mm-hmm. And play Disco Elysium. Fantastic game about all these concepts.
Wonderful game.
Really good. Moving on, what else do we have to talk about today? We got some extras to talk about at the end of the episode.
We got some extras. Let me tell you.
We got to talk about a lot of Michigan, and we got the student debt plan, and I think that'll round out the episode.
Yes, it will.
So first, this is a very short news story, one that I wanted to cover because I thought it was funny. You know, we do comedy on this show.
Yeah, we're stand-up, really.
Michigan just passed a law making it illegal to get married under 18 years old, right?
Okay.
And for context, there were some like 5,200 kids under the age of 18 that were married in Michigan throughout the last two decades or so, and more than 80% of them were young girls. Obviously, exploitative relationships, exploitative things happening here.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, so this bill passed the Michigan House a few weeks ago. It just recently got signed into law. The House vote, though, was 104-5. That's 104 people. It's a bipartisan bill.
Come on, bro.
With five people voting against it.
Believe me, like, I believe in, like, standing behind unpopular beliefs. Because, like broadly, a lot of the things that we talk about on the show, like, aren't, like, super popular.
Right.
Broadly, but, like, child marriage is, like, a crazy thing to stand your ground on.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
That's
like,
the battle.
Like, when I'm talking to people, I can stand my ground on, like, worker protections. Because there's, like, a very clear way to, like, defend those things. But fuck, dude, child marriage is, it's crazy. That's a crazy hill to die on.
And I want to give you all a moment to guess which party these five people were from, political party. And if you guessed the Republican Party, you would be right.
Ding, ding, ding.
And that's kind of like where this news story ends, right? But my only question is like, how do you allow those five people to be in your party anymore?
Uh-huh.
Like, because the excuses they gave was like, oh, an example of why this law shouldn't be in effect is because my mother married her, you know, her homecoming sweetheart or her high school sweetheart before she was 18, or something along the lines of like predators don't care about marriage, which of course isn't true because they were marrying girls at 18. But it's like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Fundamentally, what are we talking about? If you look at the stats, that 5,200 kids are married under the age of 18, 80% of them are young girls, the youngest one being 14 years old, and you're like, we don't need a law to regulate this. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
And it's also just like, shut the fuck up. Like,
yeah.
Like, you really want to be, you really want to stake like your name, your career on being one of the five people who defended child marriage?
Mm-hmm. One of the five Republicans.
Republicans, let's be very, very clear. One of the five members of the GOP in the Michigan legislature that are staking their careers on defending child marriage.
The party that has been going on and on about how trans people are grooming children in the classroom and elsewhere.
Well, yeah. Like, shout out parental rights, parents' rights to marry off their children,
well,
to predators.
Exactly. Yeah. And there was other statistics that were like, you know, a lot of the time, or some of the time at the very least, it was like 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds getting married to like, you know, teenagers.
Yeah.
Which is a bad thing.
Awful thing.
Again, talking about axioms.
Awful thing.
My fourth one would be kids shouldn't be getting married.
If I'm to like add one on right now. Yeah.
So that's the child marriage law. We had five Republicans just coming out in favor of being a predator. So
that's so good. And it's just like
pedocon theory.
It is. This isn't the first time we've covered this. Is like the crazy thing too. Like we've covered, I think, one or two other states where conservatives again have continued to stake their career on being pro child marriage.
Yeah.
all while calling Democrats groomers because they just say it's okay to be who you are.
Uh-huh.
It's a wild, wacky world we live in.
Yeah.
To say the least.
And it's, I love the dichotomy that's like, they haven't come out and explicitly say this yet. This isn't like a mainstream enough to drop the euphemisms.
Okay.
But a lot of Republicans don't want gay people to be able to get married, right?
Oh, facts.
I feel like that's uncontroversial.
I mean, to be fair, I feel like the euphemism has been dropped in many instances.
Sort of. We have Ken Paxton,
mm-hmm. Ben Shapiro tweeting a meme talking about how it was a slippery slope going from gay marriage to trans kids.
Yeah.
A lot of people on Twitter weirdly talking about how gay marriage is wrong. We're getting back to the whole marriage is between a man and a woman type thing.
We had that Tennessee bill that was like they should be able to deny marriage certificates based or attempted marriages based off of religious objections, which is just, you know, I don't want to have to marry gay people. But I love the dichotomy where it's like kids should be allowed to get married.
Yes.
Consenting adults that happen to be gay should not be allowed to get married.
And if they're in the military, they can't read gay books.
Absolutely.
Absolutely not.
It's just like such a consistent political ideology. I love it.
It's good. They think about, they have a lot of axioms. Let me tell you, they think about things. They think about things. And speaking of things I think about a lot, like the debt that I'm going to be saddled with for a while.
Things that just be plaguing my mind, that be keeping me up at night.
Things that weigh on me heavily as I enter this new stage of life. Yeah. We're going to be talking about Biden's new student
debt. We're talking about things destroying the U.S. economy. Holding us back from being the economic powerhouse of the world.
Will I ever own a home? Who knows? I don't. I can tell you that. Yeah. But anyway, per CNN, Biden on Friday announced a new avenue for his student debt forgiveness agenda. If you somehow forgot, the Supreme Court struck it down. Mm-hmm. Classic move, really, if you ask me. Very predictable.
And I learned that they did it under the, it was like the big, no, what was it called? The something questions clause, the major questions clause.
Oh.
I think they just made some, the Supreme Court, I think, just made up some new clause where they said a president via executive order can't just decide major political questions. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, this isn't a real, like, legal strategy, right?
What do you mean they can't decide political questions? They hold political office.
He was elected, right?
He was elected to do political things.
I learned that the other day, and I thought that was a really cogent legal theory.
And it's like, what do you mean political questions? What isn't a political question?
Oh, exactly, right.
Can he not issue any executive orders now? God.
Allowing drilling in Alaska. That's a political question, sir.
Dude, they're so sick.
Yeah.
They're so fucking cool. Oh my God.
They just make shit up just to make life worse for everybody. Real villains, those guys.
Holy, like it doesn't get worse than that. Yeah. It does not get worse than them. And when we're talking about worse, you know, debt I'm collected for the rest of my life. Biden, he's talking about new ways to fulfill his campaign promises.
Oh, sick.
And this one, he's calling it SAVE, which stands for Saving on a Valuable Education. Brief side note, me personally, right, saving on a valuable education, like, the whole point of these corny ass names is to do messaging, right? Uh-huh. So why aren't you calling it, like, I don't know, securing access to a valuable education? That's what I'd have called it.
They need to hire you.
Doesn't that sound better than SAVE?
Uh huh.
Like, the whole, it's all optics. Mm-hmm. So why not go in on the optics, bro? I'm sick of the, this is just a huge overarching problem with the Biden administration that we've been covering, but like, hire me.
Well, and they just unleashed their Bidenomics, like, messaging campaign, which I, like, some people have been, I think it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people fundamentally feel like the economy is great right now. They may feel it's better than a few years ago, mm-hmm. which I think it is better than a few years ago, but I don't think that they, you know, they're not like super happy about it. People still struggling paycheck to paycheck,
exactly.
Still can't afford healthcare. That's Bidenomics.
That's what are we doing here? Like, I'm saying, just like, if you're gonna go on the messaging, go in on the messaging. Mm-hmm. You know what? Like, they're constantly pussyfoot around it. Mm-hmm. Secure access to a valuable education. Don't save on a valuable education. It's ridiculous.
Call it Republicans hate you and want you to die.
Literally,
executive order.
we've proven many times we're better at messaging than they are. But yeah. I digress. Oh my goodness. So basically what this is it's an income-driven repayment plan that was crafted through a formal rulesmaking process within the Department of Education that's similar to other plans that have been able to successfully dodge legal challenges. Mm-hmm. So they've gone through the proper avenues to make sure that this is a thing that can't get shot down by SCOTUS, basically, and can't be challenged legislatively, or if it can be challenged legislatively, it's going to be very hard, or it just has to get to SCOTUS and they'll make something else up to get it struck down.
Right.
And all it really is, well, we don't know the details of what it really is. We know that currently there's a plan where if you've been doing repayments for 20 years, your debt will automatically be forgiven. Now they cut that to 10 years, which I guess is good. Now you have something to look forward to when you're like 33.
Oh, I was about to say, still an unfathomable amount of time.
Yeah, like, I don't know, an otherwise uneventful year, yeah. But maybe.
Yeah, you can have debt paid off by the time your prime has passed you by.
Exactly. You know exactly.
Once you- all of your 20s, you need no fun for your 20s.
No fun. Nothing at all. Like, yeah. Guys, delayed gratification.
That's when you're youngest, when your hair is still dark, when you can go out and experience life with your friends, when you've got time on your side,
exactly.
That's not, you should be settled with that mm-hmm. then. That's
for sure.
Right.
For sure. You're almost mid-30s. That's when you can start to breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
That's when. Mm-hmm. Can't have fun in your young life, though. And then he said some vague things about how it's going to basically cut people's payments in monthly payments in half, mm-hmm. which I don't know how it's going to do that. I don't know how accurate that is, but big if true.
Big if true.
Big if true. And that's all we know.
See, I'm wondering, like, so I know as a part of the debt ceiling plan, Biden had to agree to, like, restart payments and raise interest rates again. Like, he had to start applying that again. I'm imagining it's like, you know, you just can't have it at zero anymore. Why not make it as low as possible for all people?
Want to make it like 0.00001%.
I don't know the exact language that was in the bill that required him to, like, you know, restart payments again. But why not just make it as low as possible and make monthly payments like $1 for everybody?
No, for real. Because, like,
because you think it should be canceled.
Yeah, they, like, have to define, like, a plate. Like, if they want it to be raised at least this amount, they have to define that.
Yeah.
But if they're just saying, like, start it, like, pay a dollar. Pay a dollar back for the rest of your life every month.
Yeah.
I can do that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's easy,
that's
right?
Very manageable, frankly.
Like, why not do that? Like, if they say, you know, you can't cancel it under the HEROES Act, you have to restart payments by, you know, whatever date. Why not just make it $1?
In fact, put like a Wisconsin. That's what he'd have done.
Yeah. Or make it like 95% less. I don't know. Do something that just, like, something that just makes a mockery of our political systems, like how Tony Evers did last week with Wisconsin and 400
like
years
it's
of
good.
Funding for
like,
schools.
You can do that.
Yeah.
you can. Yeah. Why not?
Destroy our institutions. You might as well. They're already crumbling.
They are. Yeah. They are. Oh, my goodness. And I guess the last little thing we have to talk about here is how we're victims.
Oh, yeah.
Big victims. Huge victims of the weekly news cycle. Yet again, it strikes. The only interesting things ever happen on Mondays and Tuesdays. On Tuesday, Ron DeSantis is going to be on an interview, CNN interview with Jake Tapper. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Right off the heels of him firing 12 campaign staffers after financial reports came out that they are not doing well.
Oh.
They are not doing well. I think 2/3 of the money that he got in his early donations came from people who maxed out their contributions.
Uh-huh.
So he can't get money from those people directly anymore. So that's kind of sick.
Not even during the general either.
No. And then a lot of their money is locked up in money that can only be used in the general if he makes it that far.
I'm wondering what they spent it on. I haven't seen shit from this dude.
That's what I'm saying. He's been kind of radio silent on everything. He hasn't done anything fun recently, which I'm kind of annoyed about.
Except for that. Well, that wasn't even an ad they paid for. The thing we
the
covered.
DeSantis with, war room ad.
Yeah, with the Trump and the gay flags.
Trump loves gay people.
And then DeSantis showing actors that are either gay themselves or don't agree with him politically.
Yeah.
Like Christian Bale from American Psycho. Or the dude from Peaky Blinders. Like, what are we doing? Like, that. I think, isn't that dude like a socialist in the show or something? Like, I don't even know.
All of Peaky Blinders.
Yeah.
That's the only bit of information I got from that.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he's doing. I know that the reports are saying that they just overhired people for their staff, but that's so funny. Yeah. Apparently, all of his campaigns are just an absolute mess.
Yeah. These people are very online.
Mm-hmm.
They're all, and like, so are we. But, we're not running for president.
Exactly.
Not yet.
I'm not trying to hold serious political office. Yeah. I'm just trying to talk on the internet.
Podcaster really should be a protected class at this point. We could get fucked over by the news cycle. We deserve better, fundamentally.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. It's ridiculous. We need these things to happen on Thursdays and Fridays.
And we need them to not copyright strike streamers when they're covering them. Because, like, what the hell are you doing, CNN?
Like, do you not want people to watch your dying fucking program?
Yeah, exactly.
You are the worst of, like, the big regular mainstream news channels. You have the worst ratings. I'm attempting to boost them.
Do not remember CNN Plus? That shit went and gone in like 17 days. 2.5 weeks and that program was gone.
So
couldn't get anyone on it.
So fucking silly, bro. Oh my goodness. Like, what are they? Fox News doesn't do that.
Mm-mm.
Fox News doesn't run around and copyright strike people. It's absurd.
Yeah,
bro.
Fox News lets us watch them on stream.
Mm-hmm.
And I am in favor of that.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I do. You know, we have a relationship.
Yeah. We have a working relationship with Fox News.
Basically. And CNN's just denying us at every turn. I'm about to Glenn Greenwald this shit.
Speaking of Fox News, this episode is sponsored by, this episode is brought to you by Rupert Murdoch. Yeah, guys, we got a smooth $100 million in cash to run this episode.
Direct cash infusion. Uh-huh. Just can do whatever we want with it. Has anyone filled Tucker's time slot yet? Have they, like, hired a new primetime
guy? Yeah, it's Jesse Waters.
No way.
Swear to God, it's Jesse Waters. Really? Yeah, I saw, like, that a couple of weeks ago. They filled
it. Like, he's not just filling in. Like, Jesse Waters has the 8 o'clock slot now.
I think so. Well, he might be a fill until they do something else. He fucking sucks. It's Jesse Waters, yeah. He's bad.
That's, like, that's almost as bad as having Greg Gutfeld fill in.
Yeah, I hate how he looks, too.
He looks... Dude.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, Jesse Waters getting on and talking about masculinity is crazy, and I'll leave it at that.
That dude sucks. His cadence sucks. His flow sucks. Like, maybe, I don't think it'll be able to capture the hearts and minds of Republican voters like Tucker did, but I hate everything about him.
Like, his writers suck. He doesn't make good jokes. His delivery, way off.
Yeah.
Way off.
I mean, as a creator, as a commentator, I had, like, a base level, little bit amount of respect for Tucker Carlson.
Mm-hmm.
The grind is the grind, you know what
I'm saying? The grind is the grind. He loved the game, and you can tell. You can still tell. Yeah.
Jesse Waters, I hate everything about him.
Facts.
Visceral hate. Anytime I see him, hatred.
It had to have been, like, a nepotism hire or something, dude, because I feel like he is the worst Fox News personality.
Mm.
Like, I don't know what he was on, but every time
Gutfield's
I see
pretty bad too.
Fucking Waters World, I would see him cover some dumb shit, God. And it was never entertaining. I could watch a Tucker. I could watch a Hannity. I could watch a Ingram.
Yeah. Well, they got it.
I can't watch a Waters. Yeah. I can't watch a Waters.
Can't. No.
Golly, just
so bad. But I think, I'm pretty sure it's him.
I
saw that Jesse Waters
bad,
filled
dude.
It.
That sucks.
And Tucker's out here getting interviews with all the presidential candidates, minus Trump, of course.
Yeah.
Did we talk about that already?
No, I don't think we talked about that. I didn't know much of what went on with that, but I saw the Mike Pence soundbite where Tucker's like, oh, you want to send money to Ukraine, but why don't you care about all the cities that are literally degrading as we look at them, and crime that has exponentially peaked? All lies, by the way, that we've covered many times. And Mike Pence says, I don't care about that.
Yeah.
So that was gas.
I saw he interviewed Ron DeSantis, and a lot of people reposted clips of DeSantis being like, this is why he's my presidential candidate. And it was just some stupid shit talking about, like, his time in the military.
It's time torturing people in Guantanamo Bay. Like,
yeah.
So that's my candidate right there.
Like, I did force feed this one guy in Guantanamo Bay to get information.
I remember watching his eyes fade when I was force feeding him, breaking the hunger strike. Yeah. I remember hearing the muffled screams.
You know, I actually tortured someone to get information Al Qaeda, and that's how Barack Obama That's how Barack Obama got the job done. It was me.
Oh, my God. You know that one famous picture? I was the guy who took it.
Mm-hmm.
I was the guy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, probably some shit like that. But I did love a clip that I did see with Aisha Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Tucker was like, how many vaccine shots did you get? Or how many COVID shots did you get? And Asa Hutchinson didn't want to answer.
Crazy question to ask.
He didn't want to answer because, you know, Republican base, et cetera. Uh-huh. So he just ignores it and says, well, Tucker, how many did you get? And Tucker says, zero. Just a lie.
Like, we know. Like, it leaked.
You had to for
everyone
Fox.
In Fox had got the shots. Yep. Both of them. Bivalent shots, baby. Come on.
You had to.
God.
They required it of all their. And I know Tucker did, too.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's confirmed at this point.
He was required. It was a part of the leaks, bro.
And he just lied.
Like, so good. And
he
it's
gets
so
away
good
with it.
Get away with it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Him and Trump are like the two people that can just get away with it.
So
no matter
ridiculous.
What they fucking do, they just got it like that.
And you gotta respect it.
You do. I'm trying to get it like that.
I'm trying to be able to say just heinous things on air. And people are just let it slide. Meanwhile, other streamers or, you know, political commentators get flack for it.
Yeah, I'm trying to have everybody be like, oh, that's just Gage. that's just what Gage and Jeremy do. Like,
that's just who we got to be, you know.
That's
saying?
Who they are.
Oh,
that's
man.
What the show is. And speaking of the things that make the show possible, the people that make the show, the friends, the family that make the show possible, we got to give a shout out to our little patrons here, our little angel investors. Go get
that's
a t-shirt.
Right. That's right. You want to take the first half?
I'll take the first half. So we got a special thanks to Nikki Nine Lives, Caden Kraut, Lord T the Radiant, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, Talia Kotz, 40% Spite, Andrew Harris, Mike Chaplinsky, Mattias T, Omar Zuno, Clayton LaFed, Mark Yeager, Sarah McRoberts, Dylan B, Kaz, Caleb Joy, Jim Bobs, Carl D, Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Meyer, Maldonado, Hunter W, Fergalaki, Max Vezquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mooberry, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Jeff Muzzy, Bagel Burrito, Cincy Alex, Joe Stenstrom, Adrian Sandoval, Chloe Sam 601, Colleen Cutts, Gregory Isn't My Name, Veryuk, Jennifer DeVoe, Big Bird Titty, Crawfish, and Bennett Bennington III, Alexia Benanti, Nietzsche, Big Booty Beatdown, Moises T, Sam Maloney, Two-Headed Boy, Ben Shapiro's boyfriend, Jonathan Cassis, Luke O'Shea, Cucker Tarlson, Danielle Jackson, The Word of Microsoft, Jennifer Sines, Aaron and His Gundamn Gundams, Darth Father, Aiden Taylor, Corey Chambers, Sewer Snack, Ellien, John Glover, Wheat Thief 69,
Devin Hatchard, Retro Mondo, Meatball Minion, Emma the Dude Slayer, Claire McMillan, Breezy B, Elijah Murray, Veronica, a.k.a. V, Raxon, Ash Smith, The Grotler, Magic Ian 95, Flower Clown, Jasper Angaris, Beetlebugs, Three Crows in a Trench Coat, Lonnie Rogers, Slavic and Sapphic, Casey Lynn Kelly, Snake Eyes, and Hopa Giants, A.K. Gone, Aquana Don, Zach Lantian, Info Russell, Austin Greif. Greif? Grief?
Greif. I think that's, yeah.
Okay.
You spelled it phonetically.
Yeah. Marcus Corbett, Caleb Roper, Dustin Waldron, Taylor Rensock, Ishi Teddy, Cammy, Calliope, Reagan, Not Like the President, Pagan Jester, Tylan Freeman, Steak Daddy, Tay Tay, Chill Cascade, Isaac Hodges, and my mom. Thank you all so much for supporting
the show. I'm coming for all your genders, bro. Oh, now that the cat is out of the bag, I'm coming for it.
Now that I know what I'm capable of.
Exactly.
It's going to happen.
Now I understand the power that I hold over you, much like a CEO and his workers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in there.
I'm begging, I'm pleading, go get some Head in the Office merch.
Please.
And if you want to make us reading names a minute longer on the end of each episode.
Exactly. If you want to contribute to Hiddo episode inflation,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know where to go.
How about the show? Head over to the Patreon. I would love that. And I'd love you.
Personally, I do. I love everyone that's on there.
That's right.
I'm invested.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Have a great week.